is a new technology that's shipping sometime after Visual Studio 2010, .NET 4. That's going to provide some compelling new features for Windows Communication Foundation and Windows Workflow Foundation, specifically around hosting and managing those types of applications. So during the next hour, we're going to kind of dig into this and see what it's capable of and what it's going to provide. My name is Aaron Sconard, and I'm with a company called Pluralsight. And we've got a bunch of other guys here at the show this week as well. I'm the guy at Pluralsight who focuses primarily on XML and web services technologies. I focus on things like SOAP and REST and Azure. And so I use technologies like Windows Communication Foundation and Windows Workflow Foundation quite a bit. So this technology is one that I'm quite excited about because it's going to fill a need that a lot of my customers have that I interact with. I've got my contact information up here for you. If you have a question for me after the session, feel free to come right on up and we can talk one-on-one after the session is over. But also, feel free to email me after the show if you have specific questions about the technologies that I've spoken about this week, and that we can also connect on Twitter. Also, one other thing, I have three shirts that I need to get rid of before I leave the show. These are some new Pluralsight shirts that we just made that focus on, that have kind of a fun tagline on the front that has to do with our new product that we released at Pluralsight recently called Pluralsight On Demand. And the first three people that come up to me after the show and can tell me one of the names of someone else from Pluralsight that's at the show can have one of these t-shirts. First come, first serve. Okay? Now, as we dig into this, I want to talk a little bit about the motivation behind Dublin. You know, why they're building this thing that we're going to be looking at here during the next hour. The title of the talk could be a little misleading. That wasn't on purpose, but just because of some of the overloaded products that kind of use that same name that we saw on the slide. The title of the talk was Codename Dublin, and then it said subtitle, Windows Application Server. Okay, that's a name they were using to refer to this thing for quite a while until they realized that that's a little misleading. We have app server products out there in the world that do certain things and provide kind of a middleware component. And a lot of you are probably familiar with app server technologies. This is in some ways an app server technology, but it's not like the products that you would typically find out there on the market that are considered application servers. Really what Dublin provides is simply a set of extensions to IIS and WAS that make it easier to manage both WCF and WF services, okay, that are going to be long-running in nature, that you're going to need to have tooling and just monitoring, tracking support for. Okay, but it's not really a full-fledged product. This is something that's going to ship with Windows. The reason why it's called the Windows Application Server Extensions, they added extensions to the end of it, is because these components do indeed ship as part of Windows Server 2008, and they ship as part of the Windows Application Server role within Windows Server. Okay, so when you install Windows Server, you can install the different roles. One of the roles is the Application Server role, and that gives you all the WCF and WF technologies installed on the box. This is a bunch of extensions to those things. Okay, so it's not really a product that you would buy and then install on a server and it's going to give you all these magical things. This is really a lower level thing, right? You guys are going to be building code with WCF and WF and building applications that use those technologies. This is yet another piece, another tool that's going to be part of your tool belt that allows you to more easily manage and host those types of components. Okay, so you can think of it really as just some extensions to IIS. That's really what it is. It's just a tooling and some kind of low-level enhancements to the framework that make it easier to run these types of components within the IIS environment. Now, if you think about BizTalk Server. Let me get a raise of hands here. How many of you use BizTalk Server? Okay, quite a few in this room. BizTalk Server could also be considered kind of like an application server. And a lot of what we're going to talk about here in this session is going to feel a lot like BizTalk Server. And if you think about the natural evolution of BizTalk Server, you know, BizTalk has orchestrations, BizTalk has messaging. It has both of these layers. And if you think about WCF and WebF, WebF gives us the orchestration piece that's in BizTalk, and WCF gives us that messaging piece that allows you to connect systems together. And really, you could build BizTalk-like applications with WCF and WebF. You have to do a lot more work because, you know, you're going to have to build all the tools and the pub-sub engine and the message box and all that kind of stuff that BizTalk has in it to really make it useful. But you could do it. You could do it with WCF and WebF. In fact, a lot of Microsoft customers who don't quite want to bite into BizTalk, they don't really see enough value for the cost to actually dive into BizTalk all the way, a lot of people have gone off and built what they might refer to as mini BizTalk servers. You know, their own little custom BizTalk-like technology that you use within your own company, within your enterprise. Anybody here done that? Built what you would consider your own little BizTalk server type of environment? We got a few. I always run, at every show I go to, anytime I talk about these things, I usually have a few people that come up afterwards and say, I did that exact same thing. We just spent the last year building something that's a lot like that. And the good news is now, moving forward, with WCF and WebF, you can do that a lot more easily. Now, the technologies we're talking about here are not meant to be a replacement to BizTalk Server. I want to be really clear about that. BizTalk Server is not dying. It's not going away. In fact, Microsoft recently has been very, very clear that the future of BizTalk is strong. It's bright. They're going to be investing heavily in that product to make it better and better as Microsoft's flagship integration server product. The focus of BizTalk will continue to be integration, and it's going to grow and enhance in that direction. So if you're doing, you know, large-scale enterprise application integration projects, BizTalk Server will continue to be the right choice in most cases. But there's a wide variety of applications out there that a lot of customers face that aren't so integration-sensitive or focused. And yet they might want some of those features in BizTalk, but they're not quite willing to go all the way. So you can kind of think of this as a possible replacement for those scenarios. For the scenarios where you don't quite want to go all the way to BizTalk, yet you might want some of those key capabilities it provides, with WCF and WebF and Dublin, you're going to be able to have that. Okay, but it's not meant to be a replacement. It will never replace it. And you're going to have to do a lot more work when you use this stuff yourselves. This stuff will take care of a lot of the pain points, but if you want something that's comparable to BizTalk, you're going to still have to do a lot of extra work yourself. Does that make sense? So they're not competing products, and it's very likely that as BizTalk continues to evolve over the next few years, the next few releases, that BizTalk will probably take advantage of some of these technologies that we're talking about. BizTalk already supports WCF as the communication framework now. They just did that in R2, 2006 R2. And it's likely that in some future release they might support workflow. And it's likely that at some point they might build on top of Dublin for some of the stuff. I don't work for Microsoft, so I have no idea if that's going to come true. But as a customer, looking at what they're doing and what these technologies provide, I'd be surprised if that doesn't happen at some point, right? So it's all going to come together, and BizTalk will continue to provide, you know, the integration adapters, the messaging transforms, you know, all the tools that really focus on tough integration problems. And this stuff will focus more on framework-level connectivity and workflow, okay? So I just wanted to make that clear up front, because a lot of people, when they look at this, immediately start to question the future of BizTalk. The future of BizTalk is not at risk, and this is really just going to enhance the framework that you get for free within Windows. Okay, so what are some of the challenges that we face today when using WCF and WF in the wild? One of the most common things that people say when they're using WCF and WF is, I just want to get my services up and running easily. Why doesn't it just work? Why can't I just, you know, write a service and have the tool that allows me to deploy it to my IIS environment and to configure it and to monitor it and to manage it? Right? Those are the kinds of things that I just want to be able to do easily, and I just want to get them up and running quickly. That's not possible today with WCF or WF, especially with WF. If you're doing Windows Communication Foundation services and you're going to host them inside of IIS, that's fairly easy today. But if you think about what it takes to host a WF service, a long-running service that requires state management and persistence, there's a lot of stuff that you're going to have to do on your own to build a proper host for that would run within IIS properly. Okay, specifically to deal with all the state management stuff around persistence. Okay, so that's why it's just not easy out of the box. Another thing that people want is more kind of management capabilities. You want to be able to monitor and control the services that you're hosting inside of your environment. You want to take advantage of all the tracking data. You want to have tools that allow you to walk up to the service and tweak it. You might want to enable features or disable features as it's actually running in the runtime execution environment. That's not easy. That's not there today either with either of those technologies, because those are just framework technologies. There's no tooling around them. A lot of people also want better tooling support, like I just said, as well as scripting. So not only do we want to have tools that allow us to walk up with a visual type tool and inspect the service and figure out what's going on with it, but the IT departments are also going to want PowerShell commands. They're going to want scripting languages that they can use to basically walk up and work with our services at runtime. And finally, I want to make sure that the host that's going to be running my services provides enterprise-level reliability, scalability, and security. You know, we want these core features that every enterprise application needs to provide. Okay, so these are some of the core challenges that led to the creation of this new hosting environment. Those of you today who are using WF, if you're not using it inside of SharePoint, that means you had to write the host application. You had to write the host that would then deal with all these things. And if you wanted to provide your users with a nice experience, you'd have to build tools, and you'd have to build scripting environments. You'd have to provide, redundancy, basically failover capabilities and stuff within your hosting environment to give you the kind of reliability you might need. These are all problems that you have to face today when you bite off these technologies yourself. So the whole purpose of Dublin is to give us solutions to those problems in an environment that we're already familiar with. Instead of giving us a whole new tool and a whole new host, what they wanted to do was basically enhance the most popular host that all of us use today on Windows, which is IIS. You know, moving forward with WCF and WAS and all the new capabilities that are built into IIS, IIS is by far going to be the most commonly used host for your services, whether they're built with WCF or WF. And so all the stuff that we're going to talk about in Dublin is just basically an enhancement to that environment, one that we already know. And the tooling that you're going to be able to use is actually built in to the IIS management tools. So the MMC administration console that you're used to using, that's the tool that you're going to be using to work with these Dublin extensions. Okay, and they'll also provide scripting through PowerShell. As you know, IIS is very scriptable. IIS 7 made huge advances around the instrumentation and the management capabilities they built in through PowerShell. So basically anything you can do through the tool, you can also do through PowerShell. And the Dublin extensions follow suit and make that really easy to do as well. So if you think about what Dublin is, you'll see here we've got Windows Server. We have IIS and WAS, the Windows Process Activation Service that sits within Windows, and we have the .NET Framework. Dublin is just a layer that sits on top of both of those things. It's a bunch of .NET Framework extensions around WCF and WF, and it's a bunch of extensions to IIS and WAS that provide tooling around the hosting environment to do management and runtime monitoring. Okay? Now, so this is all part of Windows Server, as you can see. And again, this is part of the Windows Application Server role within Windows Server. Now, we also have Visual Studio. We have this new thing called Oslo. And we also have System Center. And these are all things that kind of interact in different ways with Dublin and with Windows Server. Oslo is going to give us a modeling language that allows us to kind of model what our services are going to look like. And there will be a repository where these models will be stored. One of the things that Dublin is going to allow you to do is walk up to an Oslo repository and deploy services that are modeled there directly into your Dublin environment. Okay, so one of the Oslo tools, this tool called Quadrant, will provide features to allow you to easily deploy services that are modeled with Oslo out into your Dublin hosting environment. So there will be integration with Oslo. In Visual Studio, you'll have new project templates and you'll have new features that also make it easy to build Dublin-compatible services and that make it easy to deploy those services out into your Dublin environment, which is basically just IIS. Most of that's already there today to a large degree. And then we also have System Center, which is obviously the management piece. That's also going to make it easier to manage your services that sit in Dublin using System Center, which is a tool that a lot of your companies probably already use for management. So there'll be built-in integration there. So that's kind of the complete picture, and Dublin is basically everything here in green. Okay? When's it going to ship? It's going to ship soon after Visual Studio 2010. They have dependencies on .NET 4, so they can't really ship until .NET 4 is locked and it ships, and then shortly after that, probably months, just 2 or 3 months after that, you'll probably see the first version of Dublin ship. And it will ship in V1 as just a download that you download off of Microsoft.com and install onto your IIS servers. Okay? So that's where this thing is coming from. Now, let's dive into this picture in a little more detail and see exactly what Dublin is providing. So if we kind of go back to this picture, we're just kind of blowing this whole thing out into a larger picture, and we're going to fill in some of these pieces. So we have Quadrant, which is part of Oslo right here. We have Visual Studio. We have System Center over here on the right. And we have the IIS Manager up here, which is another tool that we obviously use for IIS. And today, you know, with Windows Server 2003, with IIS and .NET 4, we basically have a picture that looks like this. We have Windows, and we have the Windows Application Server role and all the features that come with it. We have the baseline IIS and WAS technologies, and we have the WF and WCF frameworks. And they provide the key capabilities that we need to build any kind of app. Now, Dublin is going to provide features that enhance these different layers here and that extend these layers in areas like persistence, hosting, and monitoring. So first, let's look at what Dublin adds. It adds all these things that just showed up here in green. Okay, so it adds some new runtime databases for WF services to persist to. And it enhanced what those databases are going to look like. It also defined a new monitoring schema that will be used to actually track all the data that's being captured as your workflows execute. Okay, and then in the area of persistence, it added some new scale out and reliability features. In the area of hosting, it added some discovery and control endpoint features that allow people to walk up and manually control the services that are being hosted there within a particular application. And it added some new monitoring features. Okay, some new application monitoring features. Okay, and then up here it added a bunch of management APIs that allow you to basically manage all of IIS and all these new Dublin capabilities through PowerShell. Up in the IIS Manager piece, it added a bunch of UI extensions, tools, to IIS to make it easier for you to do all this stuff. And up here in the quadrant box, which is basically Oslo, it added that feature that allows you to deploy from Oslo directly into Dublin. Okay, and then over here in System Center, it added some new extensions to System Center to do management of all the Oslo stuff. Okay, so that's the stuff that it added. Now, in addition to that stuff, Dublin also extends a lot of the things that already exist in the framework. For example, it extends the built-in persistence database schema. It extends the SQL persistence provider and the durable timer service that exists in the framework. It extends the discovery service and the routing service. If you came to my talk yesterday on WCF and WF4.0, we talked about some of these things that are just part of the .NET framework. Dublin basically takes advantage of those things and extends them in certain ways. And then there's also some new monitoring stuff that it extended over here to do tracking. Basically, it extended the WF tracking participant technology and the trace technology. Okay, so this picture kind of helps explain why it's hard to articulate what Dublin really is. And probably the most complicated thing about Dublin from a Microsoft customer perspective is just understanding what it exactly is and what it gives you. Okay, so right now we're just kind of talking about what it is and how it fits into the Microsoft platform. And here in a few seconds, we're going to dive into a bunch of examples and actually walk through the features. And you'll get a good feel, I think, for what it's going to provide and what the experience will be like as a WCF WF developer moving forward in the years ahead. Okay? So any questions on this slide right here before we move on? Don't think I see any hands through these bright lights shining in my eyes. Okay? So we can come back to this as well later on, but why don't at this point we jump over and look at this VPC that has Dublin on it. Okay, and by the way, there's only a couple VPCs in existence that Dublin exists on. Okay, there's no install for it that's publicly available. You really can't get your hands on this stuff yet. Okay, pretty soon, hopefully, they'll start releasing some betas and some downloads. But right now, they're still holding this stuff pretty tight to their chest. They haven't let it out yet because they're still a little further away than I think they want to be to start doing public betas. Okay, so the stuff you're going to see here, you're not going to find on your installations of Windows Server today. And it's going to be a little while before you'll probably be able to grab it. Okay, so this is still a ways out. But what you're looking at here is what? What is this tool that we're looking at? The IIS Manager for version 7, right? So for IIS 7, that's what the new IIS Manager looks like. And you'll notice on the left we have our Explorer view that allows us to explore the entire server and all the different applications, the websites and applications that exist on that server, and we can drill in and see all the different artifacts that are part of those applications. And then in the middle, it shows us this feature view. This is one of the new things they added with IIS 7, having this view that kind of shows you all the different features that are made available for these particular applications. Kind of just more of a graphical way of representing those things. Then there's also the content view down here that you can click on to look at the content in this particular application. So that's more of what you're used to seeing. But here I've got this Contoso application selected, and here it's showing me all the features that are available to me for that particular application, and here's the content that exists within that application. There are the actual files. Okay, if we jump back here to the feature view, for those of you who are new to IIS 7, you can double-click on any of these things to go look at certain aspects of the configuration for the application. A lot of these things will give you different properties or UIs that allow you to go in and mess around with the configuration for this application. Okay? If you look up here at the top, you'll notice that at the very top of this thing, there's a new section called Application Server Extensions for .NET 4.0. That's essentially Dublin right there. You're looking at Dublin. Okay? And those four things there are some of the primary things you can start investigating and looking at within IIS. You can look at the services that are deployed in that application. You can look at the endpoints that are configured. You can look at a monitoring dashboard that kind of gives you a dashboard view of what's going on within that application at a specific point in time, telling you how many calls have been made to your services, how many calls have failed, how many workflows might be currently persisted and suspended, things that you may need to go in and look at as a human being and resume and after you fix the problem. Right, so that's all going to be made available to us through that monitoring dashboard. And it's also got our persistence database that we can go in and configure. So these are things that we can interact with to start using Dublin. And if you look over here on the right side, this right side pane also has stuff that has to do with Dublin. So if you come down here, you'll notice we have an import and export application feature. That allows us to easily package up an IIS application that contains WCF and WF services, and it will package it up into a zip file that you can then hand to your IT guys, and they can then take that and import it onto all the different web servers using the application import feature. And it will make sure it brings in all the right configuration settings and the right database, and all that stuff will be configured properly for that application in one shot. If you want to take one of these applications that we're looking at and export it to a zip file, you just click on export. And it just brings up a little wizard that asks you to basically specify what you want to do. I can show you how this thing pops up. Here you just go in and select the one you want to export. And once we've done that, it'll actually go off and build for me. Let's just go ahead and do this. We'll put one on our desktop. We'll call it test package and hit next. That'll package up that entire application. And if we jump out there, that test package right there is the application we just exported from IIS. We can then put that on a USB key, hand it to our ops guys or email it to them, and they can go and deploy this across all the production servers just by doing an application import. Okay? And that'll bring in with it all the configuration settings you set up on that particular application. So, there's a lot of things that this provides just in terms of the IIS features. It's enhanced IIS to make it easier to kind of deploy and import, export, WCF, .NET 4 applications. But it also provides a bunch of other stuff that we're going to be looking at as we drill through this thing. So, the first thing I want to show you in here, and by the way, most of the talk we're just going to spend walking through the tool and seeing how this thing works. If you look at this Contoso application, it consists of this is the Contoso application site. It consists of several applications, billing, CRM, expense web, and we have an onboarding WCF and an onboarding workflow application. Those two applications essentially do the same thing. They're just implemented, one's implemented with WCF and the other one's implemented with workflow, just so we can kind of see the difference of what we can do with those two things within Dublin. So the first thing I want to look at is this onboarding WCF application. Okay, so I'm going to click on that, and I'm going to go and say, show me all the services that are part of this application. When I click on that, it basically explores that application and finds for me all of the WCF services that exist in there. Notice there's just one. It's called onboarding.customeronboarding. That's the name of the service. We see the site name it's part of, and we see the virtual path that leads to that service, which is onboarding WCF WAC customeronboarding.svc. If I had multiple services in there, they would all show up right there, and I could then click on the service and inspect it. You'll notice down here below, there's information that I can see about the service. I can see, for example, the service name, the path. I can see the throttling behavior if we've got one configured. I can see what the WCF behavior is configured on this guy. If we had one, this one's empty. I can see other information down here below about how it's currently configured to be monitored. And notice that other tab, the monitoring statistics. If I go click on that, it's going to actually show me how many times that service has been called in the last 24 hours, how many times it's been faulted, how many calls have completed, how many calls have failed. And they'll likely grow the number of statistics that they make available like this through these tools over time. That's what's available right now. Does that make sense? So a faulted call, that's a really good question, actually. I'm not sure exactly what the exact difference is between those two, because they just added this before I got this build, which is like a week before this show. So I'll have to get back to you on that. But my guess would be that a faulted call is one that actually returns a SOAP fault. So you call in and you get a SOAP fault back. And a failed call could be one that went in and never came back, right? You made an HTTP call out and it hung. That'd be my initial guess. Okay, so we can explore the services. If I jump back here, you'll notice I can also just say, hey, show me all the endpoints in the system. And notice we found two endpoints that are out there that are both exposed on that service. We have one that's just the basic HTTP endpoint, and we have a MEX endpoint. And all this information is now, you know, discoverable through this tool. I don't have to go looking at config files. I don't have to muck around with writing code to print out, you know, what endpoints are exposed. All this stuff is just now visible to me within my IIS environment. So the operations guys and the IT guys that are actually dealing with this stuff will actually have some information available to them. And notice that down here below for each of these endpoints, we see information about how that endpoint was configured. And you'll even be able to go in and configure these endpoints at some point. Right now you can't really do much, but if you click on configure right here, like I just did, over here we have a configure button. If I click on that, it brings up a dialog that gives me a UI that allows me to go in and configure different aspects of this endpoint. Right now they've got a lot of these boxes grayed out and they're not letting you do that, but the plan is to provide, you know, some level of read-write behavior on top of the services and their endpoint configurations right from within the tool, right? So you're not dealing with config files anymore once you get your services deployed to Dublin, okay? So all that stuff is in there and easy to do within WCF. So let's actually look at an example now of calling one of these WCF services and seeing some of the behavior that happens here within Dublin. Well, let me show you the persistence database too. Here's where you configure your persistence database, and you can have different configurations here, different databases that you use for production or staging versus production, and they provide capabilities to make it easy to switch back and forth between those two as you move these applications around. Okay, so those are kind of the main pivot points. I think the only one I haven't showed you yet out of those was the, let me jump back here to the main view. If I jump back here to the monitoring dashboard, this gives you the high level view of everything that's going on within that application. So you'll notice here it shows me all the stats around the persisted WF instances running within this application at this point in time. So it shows me how many are running, how many are idled, how many are suspended, how many are ready to run that need to be restarted. Okay? And then if you look down, we see more details on our WCF calls, how many completed, failed, faulted. If we look down here at track WF instances, we can figure out more information about the WF tracking behavior and how many have completed, failed, or are currently active. So this is kind of just a high-level dashboard view that you can periodically look at to figure out what the health of the system is like. And if there's any workflow instances or any WCF services that may need some attention, that may need some human intervention. Okay, and if you've used BizTalk, this should look very familiar. In the BizTalk administration console, they provide a dashboard that's very similar to that, that gives you those kinds of statistics on top of your running BizTalk applications. Okay? So now that we've kind of quickly taken a tour of some of the UIs and some of the features that are part of this tool, let's go look at the code that we're going to be talking to. So here in this solution, this is a Visual Studio 2010 solution, you'll see we have this onboarding WCF project that contains a customer onboarding SVC service. And this thing just contains one operation called register customer. And it goes off and it calls two other services. It's going to call out to this CRM service. It's going to call register customer. Then it's going to call out to this billing service. And it's going to call register billing address. And then once it's done calling both of those services and doing that work, it's going to then call send notification to send a notification back to the customer. Okay, so this is a customer onboarding process where the customer registers, we receive that data, we then go call out to the CRM app, we call out to the billing app, and assuming those two things succeed, our service then sends a message back down to the customer. So this is service composition, and this example is all built in WCF just using regular C# code. So we're going to call this now. I've got a website that's already built that provides a web page that looks like this that's going to call in to that WCF service to onboard a new customer. So I'm going to go ahead and type in my name. And I'll type in a fake address. And then I'll click register. And this is going to call that WCF service, which is currently being hosted inside of Dublin. And notice it came back and said, okay, customer registration complete. Here's your customer ID. Now, what happened as a result of that? That service got called. It called out to those other two services. And then it sent a message back down to the customer in the form of an email. If we go look at the hard drive here, you'll notice that I've got a directory called inbox on C, and here's the email that just showed up right now. If you look at the time, that matches the time on my clock. And if you open this thing up, you'll see that we just got this message saying, okay, your customer ID is Sconard 6902. Okay? And so that one succeeded, went through the whole path. If we now jump back over here to our Dublin environment, and we refresh this thing, notice now, within the WCF call section, that we have three completed calls, right? And if we click on that and actually look at those three calls, we should be able to see exactly which services were called. So notice it called customer onboarding first, then that thing ended up calling those two other services, the billing service followed by the CRM service, or the other way around. Okay? And so we actually have visibility here into all those interactions that just happened behind the scenes from within this tool. If one of those things caused an error to occur, or an exception was thrown, or fault was returned, we would then be able to see that information. The error information would show up here. And then down here below, we would be able to go in and look at the exception information. We'd be able to look at any tracked properties that we may have configured to do runtime tracking. And that's going to allow us to go in and figure out exactly how to go in and fix the problem, hopefully. You know, that's the information that our IT guys and the developers who go in and to actually help debug the service will look at. Okay, does that make sense? So we got a little bit of runtime monitoring and tracking just built in just by doing that. Okay, now let's simulate an error so we can see what happens when things go wrong. One way to simulate an error, and this actually turns out to be a feature of Dublin, is you can run a PowerShell command called disable application message flow. And you can specify the website on which you want to disable all communication. This is another feature they added with Dublin that makes it really easy to basically stop an application so it can't receive any more messages. Have you guys ever wanted to do that? in IIS just want to say, can you just turn it off for a second? Right, that's the problem with web apps is you can't really turn them off, right? Because the next request that comes in will start it again. And so this is a nice feature that allows you to basically just point to a website and say, I want to disable all messaging on this website for a period of time. And then once we're happy, maybe we're doing an upgrade, for example, once we're done upgrading it and making all the changes, we'll re-enable the application message flow for that site, and then everything will start up again. Okay? So we're just going to turn off the application message flow, all the messaging protocols, for the billing application. Remember, one of those services that we just called was the billing service. So if we do that, that billing service is now turned off. You can't call it. So now if we jump back over here to our, go to our browser again. And let me change the name here to Matt Milner. And then we hit register. Notice we get an error back. We get an exception. And the error says something kind of cryptic. An error occurred submitting the request. There's really nothing there to help me figure out what went wrong. The customer is not going to be able to act on that error message. There's nothing they can do. And they're now scared because something just blew up in their face. Right? So that's not good. We don't want the customers to see this stuff. And at the same time, there's really not a lot of information being captured yet for the operations guys to be able to go in and deal with this thing. Let's jump back to Dublin now. And let's jump back over here to this view and do a refresh. Let me come back here and go to the monitoring dashboard. And we'll refresh all these things and see what we've got. Notice now in the WCF call section, we have 4 completed calls and we have 1 failed call. Okay, and if we go and look at that failed call, okay, I'll click on this guy. Notice down here, oh, that doesn't actually have any exception information in it. Where did we go here? Let me go click on this guy right here. If I can click on it. Well, it's just showing that register customer failed. But as you can see, there's really nothing here that the operations guy can really act on. And even if there was good information here for us to look at, let me just jump back here to this view real quick. And let me just look at let's go back to the onboarding service. Go to this guy. Click on this. Let's jump back and look at this view. On this again. We got 2 and we got 1 completed, 1 failed, and we really don't have any information here that's going to be helpful to us. So the operations guy can't really go in and fix the problem with the WCF service. Even if we had a good exception that we tracked right here, which you know, you could have, you could actually have that much at least. What's the guy going to do? It's not like he can rerun it, right? Because it's a WCF service. So, I mean, the best he could try to do would be to take the message that came in, if he could reconstitute it, and try to pass the message in again. But that's not going to really work right. So when you're dealing with situations where you might have exceptions or faults that might cause a business process to suspend, workflow actually provides a better model for being able to recover from those things. Because if we failed right here at this point, with a workflow, we'd be able to pick back up at our last persistence point. So say we persisted just a few seconds ago, we'd be able to pick back up right there and just tell it to resume once we fixed the problem. And in this case, it's a networking problem. It's something that is probably easily fixed. We just need to, you know, either plug the wire back in or wait for the machine to reboot, whatever the problem happened to be, and then that service call should work. And so we can just let that thing continue. So let's see how we could actually do this differently now using workflow. So I've got another version of that service in that same solution. Let me just close this one down now. called customeronboarding.xamlx. This is basically the equivalent implementation of that service we just called in WCF, but it's been implemented using WF. So we've got a receive activity that receives a message, and this operation is called register, just like our operation over in the WCF case was. And then after we get that, we just respond immediately to the caller with received as the value. Then I persist the workflow immediately. Then I call register customer on our CRM system. Then I persist again, and then I call register billing address on the billing service. Then we persist again, and then after that, assuming it was all successful, we'll send a notice of confirmation back to the customer, and that's when the email shows up. Okay, so it does the same thing as the WCF service, only we now have persistence points built into the process. So if I jump back to Internet Explorer, I can go to a different web page called Onboarding Workflow. And it essentially looks the same, only in this case, it's going to call the workflow version. And before I actually execute this, Let me come back here and delete all the emails that are in this directory right now. There's just one, so nothing's in there right now. And I'm going to come back here and just call register. Okay, now remember the billing service is still turned off. We never turned it back on. And notice the user didn't see an error. It just says customer registration has been submitted. We don't know as a customer if it's succeeded or not. We don't really care because it's up to the server to make it work. Right? So the customer is now not bothered. But something happened over there in Dublin because it definitely couldn't have worked, right? So let's jump back over to Dublin now and see what the dashboard looks like. So let me come back here and go to our monitoring dashboard. And if we refresh this, you'll notice up here at the top, do that again, that we have one suspended workflow instance. Okay, that's the instance that we just called. It's suspended. And if we go look at that suspended instance, you'll notice that it's got some detailed information down here that we can look at. Let me just kind of get, I'm running out of real estate, but down here you can kind of see, okay, that this is the suspended instance, the call to register here. And if we look at the exception, we get some exception information now that tells us, you know, the response message does not match the content type of the binding, yada, yada, yada. I'm not even sure if it's all that helpful, but theoretically it could be, right? And so we now have enough information for the operations guys to talk to the developers and to say, hey, something's going on here. What do we do? And once we determine what the real problem is, which in this case is that our billing system went down, we bring it back up. Before we do that, though, let's actually jump over here. Let's jump over here to this thing again, and let's just submit a bunch of these. So we got a bunch of them in there. Okay, if I jump back now, I keep doing that. Sorry. I keep wanting Alt-Tab to work. If I jump back here now and come back to this view and refresh it, doing an F5, we should see that we've got 7 suspended instances now, if you can see that. Okay, so we got a bunch of them. If we actually click on those to go view them, we can see the whole list of each of the different suspended instances. And they're all going to show up right here in this view. I just don't have enough real estate to show it all at once, but there they all are. Okay, so we got to go fix it. Otherwise, this list is just going to keep growing, right? Then it's going to get really hard to fix the problem. And make all those services go through. So the way we do that in this case is we just re-enable application message flow. This is going to turn the billing service back on. So the billing service is now up again. Now I should be able to go back into here, and I should be able to right-click and say resume. And that thing should resume, assuming it's going to work. Okay, so we'll resume that. Notice they're resuming. Okay, and if I jump over here to look at my directory, Notice we got two emails. Those are the two I just resumed. Now, if we had 1,000 things in there, we're not going to want to go in one by one to resume them all, right? Remember, everything that I do inside of the tool, I can also do inside of PowerShell. So if I jump over to PowerShell again, there's a few commands we can use. There's one called get service instance, and you can pass in some parameters to search for service instances that are suspended or in certain states that you might be looking for. By default, it's going to return a list of all the ones that were suspended. So now we should be seeing like 5 suspended instances that were just spewed out to the console window. Now there's also one called resume service instance that you can use. And check this out. What if we do this? Get service instance and we pipe it in to resume service instance. And that seemed to work. Now let's jump back over here to the administration console and rerun this query. Notice they're all gone. And if I jump back here to my inbox, there's all the emails. Stuff like that is very powerful, right? Because you now have this ability to build long-running services workflows that can have problems when things go wrong, especially when you're dealing with communication and you might have issues. Those things can go into a suspended state in a persisted store, and then your admins can go in and identify those problems and basically give them a kick to come back to life and to finish up once we've solved the actual problem at hand. Does that make sense? Okay, so those are some of the key features that Dublin provides. Now, it also provides, let me show you one other example in here, and then we'll wrap up. One of the other things that you can do here, let's simulate the case where the machine goes completely down in the middle of processing something. Okay, so let's say I've got this other service here called, let me jump back over here to Visual Studio. I've got this other one called the self, it's the onboarding portal, and I've got this thing called the self-service portal. And basically what this thing is going to allow me to do is it's going to allow me to register again someone. Let me just actually walk through it so you can see it. If I jump back here to IE and go to my favorites, I've got this self-service portal register. And it's similar to the other ones where I come in and put in my name, last name, email address, rugs per month, and a shipping address. And before I actually execute that, let me delete all these emails in here just so we have nothing. Now, when I register in this case, it's going to run a slightly different process. It's similar to the other ones I just showed you, only now it's going to ask you for a confirmation. So it sent me an email, and if I jump back over here to Explorer, we can see the email it sent, and notice it gave me a confirmation code. And then I can take that confirmation code and I can paste it in back into the browser right here and hit complete registration. And once that's done, we should see the final confirmation email show up back in our inbox directory. That's this one right here. Okay, so it could be a long-running process. Okay, it could take a while for that confirmation thing to actually occur. Right, so what I want to do is I want to run this thing, and while we're actually waiting for that confirmation to take place, what I want to do is I'm gonna kill the w3wp.exe process, so that process just completely goes away, right? As it was actually waiting to finish executing that workflow, that's gonna put that workflow into basically a suspended state temporarily. And then we're going to see how this, one of the key features of Dublin kicks in. There's this thing called the instance restart service that's going to be monitoring the workflow persistence store, looking for basically zombie workflows that need to be restarted. And then once it finds that thing, it will go ahead and restart it and allow it to finish processing where it left off. So I'm going to walk through this process, and I'm going to choose a slightly different name this time. The name I'm going to use is Aaron Jones. And when you use Jones as the name in this case, it actually is going to put in a fictitious, just kind of an explicit delay that's going to last for like 30 seconds longer than normal. So here's my Aaron Jones thing. I'm going to go ahead and open this thing up, grab my confirmation code. I better speed up. I'm not going to make it in time. I come back here and do this and complete the registration. And then while it's doing that, there's going to be a 30-second delay. I'm going to bring up the task manager. I'm going to come down here and find w3wp.exe, and I'm going to kill it. Okay? And if I scroll back here to our inbox, notice we never got that second confirmation email. There's still just the one in there. Okay, the original one. We never got the second email yet. Notice w3wp.exe is not running yet again. If I jump back over here into the Dublin view and I come back to my the actual monitoring dashboard, we should see at some point that we've got one thing running. I'm just going to hit refresh here for a little while. And eventually we should, do you see that right there, ready to run, one? It just found that service, the actual persisted service that was temporarily disabled, right, because the process went down. And it was just sitting there in the database. It's kind of like a zombie. Then it needed to be restarted by the host. And the host is now determining this on our behalf. We didn't have to do anything. And it's just going to start it back up again. If I just do another refresh, we should see now that thing is running again. It's actually complete because I took so long talking. Okay, now if I jump back to the inbox, we should see that second email in there. There it is. Okay? So those are the kinds of features that you get with Dublin out of the box, right? It's all about managing WCF services and especially WF workflows that are going to be long-running in nature, that are going to take advantage of persistence and state management, and it gives you these tools that make it really easy to manage this stuff from an operational perspective. And these are things that we just don't have today with WCF or WF, and most people do need them. Okay? So let me jump back now to the slides and see. We're just going to kind of review a few of the things that we talked about. We saw that when we build workflows, we can take advantage of persistence points. And anytime we have those persistence points in our workflows, we can, you know, there's functionality built into Dublin to basically take advantage of that capability, right? So there's going to be the persistence database. Dublin will take care of putting our workflow in that persistence database. We didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. If something happens and goes wrong and the machine goes down or it reboots or the process gets killed, that instance restart service will be able to pick it back up for us on our behalf. Dublin also is able to take advantage of the routing service that's part of WCF 4.0. And in future versions, they may provide some tooling. Right now, there's no tooling in this to take advantage of the routing service, but I could imagine one day having some UI capabilities within Dublin that makes it easy to set up and configure your routing rules right within Dublin, right within the IIS manager. Okay? And then you can do things like this, where you set up versioning policies based on content-based routing. Right? So you have version 1 of the service, then version 2 of the service. And when messages come in, the routing service determines which one to send it to based on some of the content in the message. Maybe it's the action, maybe it's a specific field, maybe it's a zip code, who knows what it is. But that's a key capability that Dublin is going to allow you to take advantage of in the future. Okay, so we have the routing service. We also have this instance restart service and a durable timer service that are built into the framework that you can take advantage of within Dublin to get some of that retry behavior that we just saw. The example we just did is very similar to what you see here in this slide. Right? We started this thing off. We ran the workflow, and then while it was waiting, it was waiting for that 30-second interval, the process went down. And this other service here called the Instance Restart Service, which is just part of the Dublin extensions, was running behind the scenes looking for those entries in the database. And once it found that thing, it basically sent a request in to reactivate that workflow and to tell it to continue from the last persistence point. Okay? Dublin also makes it easy to do scale out, because you saw how we can do application import and export. So once I can get my application into a nice little tidy zip file, it's then very easy to hand that thing off and to actually use MS Deploy or something like it to push that zip file out to all your different production servers where you want to host that application. And it's smart enough, the capabilities behind the persistence store are smart enough to allow you to have multiple servers talking to a single persistence database. Okay, and it will know how to deal with competing consumers, right, for those workflow instances. And all that kind of stuff is very difficult to write today if you're writing your own host. That's all just part of Dublin, and is going to be, you know, a key feature that you'll probably take advantage of if you're building web farms that are going to host the same application on many servers. Okay, and the other thing that you should keep in mind is that all this stuff we're talking about in Dublin is also extensible to some degree. They've added in they've extended the persistence database and added in a new monitoring database, and all that stuff is there. Dublin takes advantage of it. But third parties also have an opportunity here to plug in to what they're doing. And if you wanted to introduce your own extensions to their extensions, you could do that. You could also take advantage of the data in those databases, in your own apps. If you want to provide a more sophisticated monitoring engine that sits on top of this Dublin stuff, you could do that. It's all available. It's all public. You can plug in, and there are companies out there that are already doing this, that have work in progress to provide some nice capabilities that will sit on top of Dublin. Okay? So that, in a nutshell, brings us to the end of this little tour, I like to call it, of Dublin, because we've kind of walked through all the key features that it's going to provide. You've seen how it's going to provide some management capabilities on top of WCF, on top of WF, and a lot of it has to do with managing the persistence capabilities, pausing, resuming, terminating, starting workflow instances. And that's all now possible within IIS. Okay? So this really fills the gap, the last big gap, the last big hole, I like to call it, that exists today around WCF and WF. Today, the biggest hole, the biggest issue that we all have is there's no host. Dublin is that host. Officially, IIS is the host, right? We shouldn't really call it Dublin. Dublin's not really the host. IIS and WAS are the host. Dublin just adds a bunch of extensions that provides tools that make it easier to use that host for these types of apps. Okay, is that clear? Okay, we have time. This is the one session where I actually ended 5 minutes early. So we have time. By the way, we're going to have a bunch of screencasts, and we actually are going to have a mini course on Dublin up on Pluralsight On Demand. And the screencasts are all free. You can go up and grab those anytime. Those are just, we'll probably have 3 or 4 screencasts on Dublin within the next 2 to 3 weeks up on our website. So if you want to come back and look at this stuff, look at the demos again, you know, feel free to go do that. And once Dublin is closer to shipping, we'll have that mini course available that will provide much more detail and go into some of the inner workings of those features I showed you. Okay? So, any questions? Yes, right here. In a load balancing scenario, can I use... Oh, right. Does the dashboard look at everything in all those services? Yeah, the information that's being stored is going to be stored in that database that you configure. So it'll feel a lot like BizTalk in that sense. And the dashboard view that you would see is coming from that store. So they would all, if they're all looking at the same store, they'd all be getting the same data. Very similar to how BizTalk works in that sense. Okay? Any other questions? Yes. Yeah. Right. So the issue you're saying is if your app domain goes down because it wasn't used for a period of time, then your timer doesn't fire. Right. This isn't fixed in Dublin because they haven't added the feature. It's really an IIS feature that needs to be added to basically make it so your app domain never recycles or never goes down. And I know they've been talking about that. They've received this feedback and heard it loud and clear that they need to make that possible. But there's been a lot of debate between, I think, the IIS team and the Dublin team and whether or not that's really a good thing to add. And so I think it's still up in the air. I'm not 100% sure if it's going to happen by the time this stuff ships. But I do know they have been talking about it. But it's not really something Dublin can change. It's something that the IIS team is going to have to change. And a lot of people want that to change because you have the same issue with mostly it's the WCF guys who want to see that change, because when you're if you have WCF services that are like holding on to resources like sockets and stuff like that, you just don't want that stuff to be recycling, period. So stay tuned. Feel free to email me after the show if you want more details on that. I could send some emails around and see if anything's changed. Okay. Do you have another question? Yeah, go ahead. Is there any schema for Oracle? The only database they ship with Dublin is going to be the SQL one. But, I mean, it's theoretically possible that it could sit in Oracle. And I've heard them talk about that before. As long as you can take the SQL and build the database inside of Oracle, that's all that should really matter. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's possible. I think they would want to facilitate that. I know they've talked about making it possible on different versions of SQL Server, you know, like SQL Express versus SQL Server itself and stuff like that. So it may not have to be, you know, a paid version of SQL Server is my point. I mean, they may make a business decision that says, we want you to buy SQL. But I don't think they're going that route. Okay, but again, I don't work for Microsoft, so I can just say whatever the hell I want. Anyway, any other questions? I thought I saw another hand. No? Okay, we're almost out of time. If you guys hurry out, you'll probably beat everybody to the coffee and drinks if there's anything out there. We got 1 minute and 40 seconds left. If anyone wants a T-shirt, come on up and give me the name of one other Pluralsight guy here at the show. You get a T-shirt. I've also got a few discount coupons for Pluralsight On Demand if anyone's interested. And enjoy the rest of the show.